What's up, everyone? You're listening to Operation Dichotomy. I'm Paul. I'm your host, and we are the bridge between perception and reality. As usual, our goal here is always to create a society of greater understanding and empathy so that people are slower to speak and more eager to listen and hear the other perspective, not be so stuck in their own. We believe that even with just that small shift in society, we're going to solve a lot of the problems that we see around us today. If that sounds like something that you are interested in that you can get behind, be sure to connect with us at operationdichotomy.com or on Instagram at operationdichotomy. That's where most of our updates happen. If you're following us there, you'll get to see everything basically real time. And last but not least, if you found any value in the content that we are sharing, whether it's the podcast, whether it's the posts, whether it's anything else that you find that we put out there, and let me just say, I know you're going to find today's very, very valuable. Please go ahead and share. And if you are on iTunes or Spotify or whatever podcast platform, be sure to leave us a review and a 5 to 10 star rating, whatever is the highest, because that helps us get more awareness as well. That way you can, it's an easy way for you to get on board with their mission and help us to do what we do. So thank you. Now, without further ado, I am going to introduce our guest today. She hails all the way from this place called Canada. Over on the east-ish coast, just a little bit north of Toronto. Her name is Mina Yoon. She is a personal trainer. She's a finance guru as well. So if you have any money questions, you'll be able to ask her when you connect with her later. She's a part of this awesome networking, not really a networking, you know, it's one of those things that's really hard to define, right? Part of RTA Accelerator, which is how I got connected with her. That automatically means she's awesome. And last but not least, for the sake of today's conversation, she is quote unquote a cancer ass kicker. And yeah. I say that in the present tense because she is actually currently in the process of kicking cancer's ass. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Mina, thank you so much for your time. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here.
We are honored to have you. We are so glad that basically that you have the, not just the experience, but the, I guess vulnerability is the word here. The willingness to be vulnerable and share your story with us. Like I said before to the audience, I am 1,000% sure we're going to learn something and gain so much insight from our conversation. But if we could start just around the time of the diagnosis and maybe before that, if you could help us to understand your story, that would be great.
Yeah, this is actually a 3-year journey now.
Okay.
It happened at the beginning of 2017. My spouse, it's a funny story, he kind of turned over and put his hand on my breast and he squeezed it and he said, what is this? And I literally thought, oh my God, we've been together a long time, but you need to up your game. This isn't working for me. Like I really thought he was trying to say something, but he said, no, really is this. And I put my hand to feel a lump in that breast that I didn't know was there before. So he said, you know, please get that out. And that's what I ended up doing. I went to the doctor. It started a whole string of events where he sent me for a scan, a mammogram, an ultrasound. And he said, you know, you don't have any family history. You're young, you're healthy. It's probably nothing. Most of them are nothing. But sure enough, it came back saying, no, we really think this is something. I was sent in for a biopsy and it was confirmed that I had not only one, but 2 cancerous tumors. The second one, I couldn't even feel it. I could see it where it's supposed to be, but if I felt it, and you know, women's boobs they're all lumpy. There's everywhere, right? So I'm like, is it that lump? Is it this one? I don't know. So to this day, I never knew where exactly that second lump was, which is actually really frightening to be honest, because how would you ever know if you have that happening in your body? So at that time, I had what's called a lumpectomy, where we had a surgery just to remove those 2 cancerous tumors. And then they always want to see if the cancer has spread to your lymph nodes. So then they usually remove the 3 closest lymph nodes to those tumors. And I was lymph node positive. So the first lymph node did test positive for some cancer spread. But other than that, we were all good. I did not need chemo at the time. So that was really wonderful. And I made the very active, somewhat controversial, but also highly educated decision to reject radiation therapy. I did a whole bunch of other holistic and integrative alternative treatments instead. And really, I, as far as I was concerned, I beat it like a boss. I kicked that mother to the curb and I just went back to living my life. And then I think, so what happens after that, every year you have to go back for a mammogram just to make sure that it hasn't come back. I've never liked mammograms. Like, number one, squishing your boob to the thickness of a pancake is no fun. Oh, yeah. But I also really don't feel that they are accurate enough for enough women. You know, it's helped save many women's lives, but it's also missed a lot of cancers. And sure enough, I had my follow-up mammogram last May. It came back completely, didn't even see a thing. So I got the all clear. But as the months went on, I just really did not like how my breast was feeling. I didn't like it. So finally, that voice in the back of my head got loud enough that in November, I went back to my family doctor to let her know that I don't like the way this breast is feeling. And so she did a breast exam, and that's when she found a lump in the other breast. I'm like, yo, man, hell? Like, what's going on? So the ultrasound came back to find that in the original cancer breast that I had 5 tumors in that breast, even though just a prior to the mammogram, nothing. So now I'm faced with the decision that, well, not even a decision. I was faced with the fact that because there were so many tumors now in that breast, that a lumpectomy is no longer an option. And I now had to have a mastectomy to remove the entire breast. And then there was a question as to what to do with this mystery breast that has a lump there that, you know, after the biopsy, we found out that it wasn't cancer, but it was a precancer. So I now have 5 cancerous tumors in the left breast and then 2 precancerous lesions in the right breast. So there's like this mystery of like, do I want to have a mastectomy on one breast and just a lumpectomy on the breast? So I'm thinking, you know, I had 2 thoughts. One of them is, what the fuck am I going to do with one boob? So like, do I just want one boob? Like, when I do the rock the uni boob look? And so I was really dealing with all of those questions. And then, and also thinking, but then at the same time, it would be nice to have one breast. Like, just to have one boob, at least keep one nipple and one breast. But I really thought very hard about it. And I thought, you know, I'm not doing this a third time. So who's to say that there are other lesions in the right breast that you haven't found yet, given the fact that with my left breast, you missed 5 tumors on the mammogram. So I just really didn't have any faith in that. So I did opt for a double mastectomy. So in January 24th, so it's like barely 2.5 months ago, I went in for surgery to have both breasts removed. And I, a couple things happened there. So one of them was, I am really dead set against having breast implants. So I have my own beliefs about that in terms of, from a health perspective, I just don't think it's the way for me to go. Mm-hmm. And I did not qualify at the time to have what's called, there are certain types of reconstructive surgeries. So I don't know if you've ever heard about this, but there are options where you can remove areas of one body. So the most common part would be your lower abdomen. So you can remove the skin and fat from your lower abdomen and graft them to your breasts to make boobs out of them. It's the most amazing thing. Did you even know that that existed?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't know myself until a few weeks ago. So I was looking into that as an option. But to make a very long story short, I wasn't a candidate to do that at the same time as the mastectomy. Hmm. So currently as it is, I am sewn up with what's called a flat closure. So I have no skin, I have no nipples, the breasts were removed, and I just have 2 straight lines going across my chest. So I have nothing there. Hmm. So that was an experience and an adjustment in and of itself. But the crazy thing is, when I went in to meet my surgeon for the follow-up after the surgery, so what they do is they remove all the tissue, and then a pathologist will actually study what's in there. And what we found out was what we thought were 5 little tumors were actually all part of the same tumor. So I had one giant 5-centimeter tumor in there.
Wow.
And which is even worse to think that the mammogram missed a 5-centimeter tumor. Yeah. So you know, I actually have some theories that, you know, maybe that third tumor was actually there from the beginning and you just never saw it. Like none of the scans saw it. It was a little tumor back then. They only saw the first two. So those are the ones that they took out. But that third tumor was staying there the whole time and allowed to grow for another 2.5 years before I found it again. I have that theory. It is all conjecture. I will never know. Currently, I'm just being treated as if it's recurred. So I'm always dealing with like the doctor saying, well, it came back because he didn't do radiation. And I'm like, you actually don't know that. And, right. And none of us will be able to prove either way. Yeah. But that's really what's been happening. I was told that I was, you know, because of the size of the tumor, I will likely need chemo. And because it is also spread to the lymph node, but not quite a lot, just a little bit. So it's called a micro spread, micro metastases. Mm-hmm. And then there is presence of some individual cancer cells that have now spread into my chest wall. Ooh. They've decided not to do more surgery for that. So I'm just going to need chemo and radiation. Okay. But then, like, surprise, I got to qualify for another test to show that chemo would not benefit me. So I am not doing chemo. So like, yay. So this is like new information I just discovered a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I will be going in for radiation in about a couple of weeks. I should have started radiation now, but because of all the changes that are happening in the hospitals as a result of COVID-19, hospital that I'm getting treatments out of, they're scrambling to kind of change certain techniques that they use. So I will probably get started in a couple of weeks. So that's like what's been going on in the last 3 years for me.
Oh man. Yeah. That's a lot, obviously. And that brings us to where we're at today. I want to go back a little bit because one of the first things that you said that kind of surprised me, but then also didn't surprise me. When we were talking about the whole epidemic of cancer, where they're saying that it's going to be 1 in 2 people at some point are going to be afflicted by cancer. Honestly, one of the first things that I was thinking when you said that was, cancer doesn't run in our family. We have all kinds of other problems that I have to worry about, but I feel like cancer is not one of them. But when you said that you had no history of cancer and just kind of just showed up, I'm like, oh shoot, it's not necessarily the case. And I am no doctor. I am no scientist in this area. I'm sure you know way more about this than I do, but I think that's one of the things that I want to clarify for the audience, just to think about, right? That just because it's not in your history does not necessarily mean it's impossible for you to get cancer. Not to say let's live in fear of it. Like, oh my gosh, I never had cancer history, but I might get it. Just understand that that's not necessarily true. Yes. Man, you said so much stuff that I want to dig into.
Well, just to even clarify on that, you know, I wouldn't know so much their cancers. Certainly there is a genetic component to many cancers. So if you have a specific type of cancer that runs in the family, you are likely at higher risk.
Right.
But with regards to breast cancer, you know, there, I don't know if you remember that really famous story about Angelina Jolie, whose mother died of cancer. Mm-hmm. And then she herself found out that she carried one of the gene mutations that increases your chance of getting cancer. So the most common gene mutations for breast cancer, for short, they're called BRCA. So BRCA 1 and 2. And I believe if you carry both of those genes, you have an 80-85% chance of getting diagnosed with breast cancer in your life. Wow. Really, really high. A lot of those went. So why Angelina Jolie got so famous is because she opted to have her breasts removed, even though she did not yet get diagnosed with breast cancer. And I remember like it was a big deal. It was all over the news and everything. But what a lot of people don't understand is that over 80%, and it could be as much as 90% of breast cancers that are diagnosed, do not carry those genes and do not have a family history. Only about 5 to 10% of breast cancer diagnosis are amongst people who do carry those genes. So actually the vast majority of people that do get diagnosed with breast cancer have no family history.
Okay. Well, there you go. Dispel that myth, because that's what we're here to do.
Yes.
Well, that's okay. You also mentioned that you opted against breast implants for health, just health reasons, or was it, can you explain that to us a little bit? Like what?
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, you know, I come from the holistic health space. So as a personal trainer, I'm very much into holistic living and really eating and supplementing well and exercising so that you can be at your optimal health. I just personally don't think that that breast implants, if you looked at the ingredients that are in breast implants, it's actually really frightening if you studied what's in them. So I have had a history of having an overactive immune system where, you know, I tend to overreact against certain foods or certain objects and this sort of thing. So I think I want a chance having breast implants because once they're in there, it's not like you can just take them out. You know, like it's not as though if I drank milk and it made my, it liquefied my insides, you know, then I just stopped drinking milk. But when it comes to implants, once they're in there, like they're in there. Yeah. And secondly, they only really last for about maybe 15 years max. Anyways, even if you don't have any problems, they do eventually start deteriorating inside your body. So even if you don't have any problems, you do need to replace them every 15-ish years or so. And then thirdly, this is where I kind of flip back and forth about it because it has nothing like, you know, thankfully it's almost happened to me, but you know, people make this joke when they find out you're going to lose your breasts because of breast cancer, they make this joke, well, at least you get a free boob upgrade or free boob job. And which is true, because if you have a breast reconstruction surgery, most health insurances, in our case, in Canada, we have a federal health plan, it's covered. Mm-hmm. So I don't pay out of pocket for it. So technically it's a free boob job, but what nobody understands is they're kind of like dead objects on your breast, because apart from breast augmentation, where they just add implants to your breast, for breast reconstruction, all the contents of your breast have been removed and replaced with this breast implant. Oh. So the nerves, all nerves have been cut. So they're like, it feels like, I don't know, I can imagine they would feel like dead objects on your chest because you have no feeling. So like there's no physical sensation or pleasure taken from them. They're just there for aesthetic purposes. And I'll add a bonus point for no implants. So I'm a part of quite a few different Facebook groups, the Facebook support of women who opted to reconstruct or opted not to reconstruct or also opted to get their breast implants out. The number of women that ended up getting breast implants after breast cancer and got so sick from them. Like just to read their stories, that's enough for me to say I am not chancing it. Breast cancer patients do have a much higher percentage of getting complications with implants because of all the treatments that they've been through, specifically radiation therapy. It can cause a lot of complications if they opted for breast implants. And I'm just thinking, you know what? It's not worth it. And some of these women now, you know, a lot of elective surgeries are being canceled. So some of these women were like, waiting for that day to get these, what they call them, toxic bags out of their body. And now it's being canceled and they're practically in tears because they're so sick and they're in so much physical pain. So that's my very long story of why no implants. Having said that, there are some women that are doing great, but I'm just not going to chance it.
I know at least this is something that I recently have been learning about too. And coincidentally, as we started the podcast as well, but I know I've met at least two women who have had implants in the past, and they're literally going through what you just said. Like their body's attacking these foreign objects in their body. I think it's called breast implant illness or something like that.
Yes.
And it really messes with their body. I can't imagine adding that to also having to fight cancer, go through radiation, go through all this stuff.
Absolutely.
So not to say that you made a great choice, because I am in no position to say that, but it sounds like obviously you thought through it. Obviously you weighed the pros and cons and you made a decision. I was just curious, and hopefully I wanted to to sort of educate myself as well as everybody else why you came to that decision. Another thing that I wanted to ask you about, just through the last 3 years, when your quote unquote common person thinks about someone who's battling cancer, there are the obvious things, right? The obvious struggles where you have to go through chemo or radiation. You have to go through the physical struggles and just the possibility of it getting worse and all this stuff. But I also feel like there's so much underlying or secondary struggles that we can't see and that we don't really get to understand. And I feel like that really keeps us from empathizing with those that are battling cancer. And I don't know if you have one specific answer to this, but can you share with us some of the more underlying struggles that most people aren't aware of?
I'm probably going to say the biggest one is after a patient has been declared cancer-free or there's no evidence of disease. And, you know, for so many women who have just been through chemo or and radiation, they did the surgery, they went through hell. And then after maybe a year of having all that done, and then the next, and then the doctor saying, okay, you're good. See you next year. And there is like this sense of loss that a lot of women experience, myself included, to a degree, because it's almost like everybody's like, oh, you're better now. But there's, I think, two things, like transitioning to living a normal life again, really, really hard, because so much of their physical, emotional energy has been zapped. And so now all of a sudden it's like, okay, you're back to normal, go back to work and like do you know, clean the house and take care of the kids and like as if nothing has happened. And it's actually a really difficult transition for a lot of people to suddenly live what's called a cancer-free life. There is always a fear, like, you know, before my worst nightmare came true, which is being re-diagnosed, when I had to go in for scans, there's an actual term that I learned called skanxiety. So it's like, I'm totally fine. Like I'm fine. Then the minute the technician is say doing the ultrasound or doing the mammogram, I suddenly feel like this panic, like, oh my God, what if they find something? So it is kind of always there. You know, I'm a really bad example because my worst nightmare actually did come true. Like I did get re-diagnosed. Like you've God, be kidding me. I'm doing this again. But that, I would say that's the biggest one. I find that everyone's experience is so, so unique. I have met women, many, many women who told nobody in their life that they were going through this. Wow. So there's that as well, because they don't want to have to deal with people treating them a different way, or, you know, maybe they're just private people. I know one woman who she said, yeah, I attended a wedding. I was wearing a wig and it was such a good looking wig that people were staring her in the face, having no idea that she was in the middle of going chemo treatments. So it's like they walk among us. And then there are people like me that, you know, blast it all on Facebook and you get a play by play of everything, but it's so unique. But I really find that the challenge, the biggest challenge, is picking up the pieces and moving on once the doctors are done with you.
Yeah. Ooh, okay. You mentioned through some of the conversations and emails that we had that for the most part, the people around you were very supportive. They were, I'm guessing, family and friends that loved you and just wanted to be with you and be there with you through this. But there was a small minority of people who have said, and let's just say they said, I don't know what else happened, but there have been some ignorant things that were thrown out there. What were some of those things, if you don't mind sharing, and can you correct them if it's not obvious for people?
Yeah. Oh gosh. So, well, first of all, I have been so blessed. Like I have an amazing, amazing network. And some of these people I don't even know that well. You know, I might just know them in the space, in the online space. I've never even met them in person. I have to say I've been very blessed with extremely supportive and non-judgmental people. Just sort of, you know, Mina, it's your body, it's your life, your choice. Totally support what you just to do. It's been really, really wonderful. And it's so great as well to have a life partner that just really stepped up to the plate. He's been absolutely amazing throughout all this. I find that the times, like, there have been a few instances where people have made certain assumptions. It was a lot different the first time around when I only needed a lumpectomy. But this time around, facing the prospect of losing both breasts, this was a whole, oh my God, a whole other ball game. And I got thrust into this whole world, this deep, dark rabbit hole of how systemically rooted it is that our breasts are tied to our own sense of physical beauty. Like, I really got to experience that. So, you know, there's the whole question of, you know, if I don't have breasts, am I still a woman? You know, if I don't have an hourglass shape, am I still physically attractive? You're thrust into all this, which I didn't have to really deal with the first time around. So this has been a very, very unique experience for me. So I remember the very first time sitting with a couple friends, bless their heart, two guys, just saying, right? But I was sitting with two guys and I had to break the news to them. And this was really quite early on when I had just been re-diagnosed, and I had to break the news to them that the cancer is back and I will now be losing both breasts. And one of them made this gesture where you put, you know, both hands in front of your chest, which is like the universal sign language for breasts. Okay. And he turned to my spouse who was sitting next to me and he made this joke. He said, "Oh, I'm sorry, man." And I had this thought, like, I was so stunned. Like, did you just offer condolences to my partner? Like, I'm the one losing my fucking breasts and you just offered condolences to my partner? Like, I was so stunned. Like, you know, when you have like that look and you're stunned to silence and you're now formulating, like, what the hell am I going to say to him? But, you know, fortunately, my spouse didn't think it was funny. He just like said very honestly, he's like, "Well, no, you know, really, honestly, I just want her to be healthy." And of course, then my friend just sort of backtracks, like, "Oh yeah, of course." But that was, you know, this is the first experience I started to get about how, you know, maybe like a woman's body is, it's like a woman's body is somehow tied to the, for like, meant for the pleasure of someone else. Like, that was just the message I got in that moment. So that was my first experience. Couple of other experiences I've had was also from another guy. Man, you guys aren't doing very well, right? Hey. But, you know, there's always a question people ask me, which I don't really get offended by, as long as it's in the form of a question that they're curious. But people do ask me if I intend to reconstruct down the road. And I remember telling him that he was asking that. I remember going over the pros and cons of the different options of whether I was going to reconstruct or not. And I was just kind of going over like the different sort of options that I had been researching. He cut me off and he said, "Yeah, but, you know, think of your man." And I'm like, "Oh, wow. No, my man doesn't have any say in whether what I want to do with my body." Right. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of said it like that. And then the third one was with, interestingly enough, another breast cancer survivor, and we were having a conversation. Now, she had breast cancer about 10 years ago, and she opted for reconstruction, but the kind of reconstruction she had was, it was a pretty significant surgery. It wasn't just implants, but they had, she lost a significant amount of muscle on her chest. So they did this thing where they cut out your lats from your back and thread it through the rib cage and bring it to the front. Like, it's some crazy shit that's available out there. I mean, it was like a 10-hour surgery. You'll probably have to be off work for up to 3 months to recover from that. It's a big surgery.
Yeah.
And so she had that done, but she's doing well. And I remember she was talking to me saying, "You know, now that I think about it, I regret doing this reconstruction surgery." And she said to me, "Mina, don't do it. Don't do the reconstruction. You have a man. He loves you. You don't need to do it. So that's the third assumption, that like the value of a woman's breasts is tied to whether she is single or whether she's already in a committed relationship. Oh, interesting. Right? So I also kind of saw that, you know, there have been other things that I've indirectly heard, maybe not to me personally, but the value of a woman's breasts also relies heavily on how old she is. So, you know, if you're, you know, much older, say in your 60s or 70s, you don't need breasts. Versus if you're in your 20s or 30s, then yeah, you really want those breasts. So there's been these underlying things that I have been hearing about that, and how that's tied to your age or your marital status.
And I guess that depends on what people's perceptions of breasts are, right? Like, it's how tied are they to, like you said before, a woman's identity in their appeal as a spouse or appeal as a single person. It's just so many implications that people generally don't tend to think about, because you call them assumptions, right? So society basically makes all these assumptions about what they should be or what they shouldn't be. And we sort of operate on those assumptions. But I feel like unless you're in a position like you were in, where you actually have to think through in depth these decisions, because it is going to affect the way, not just your life, but the way I think that you think and feel about yourself and how you kind of fall into the societal norms, quote unquote, right? I'm so glad you said that. I'm so glad that you said that these are assumptions that people have made. And those are the exact things that we try to bring to light. Man, like, to be honest, like when you said a lot of that stuff, I don't know if I had those assumptions per se, where it's one way or the other, but it was definitely never something that I had to think about, because, I mean, one, because I'm a man, sorry that our kind is so dumb, but it is what it is, all right? Yeah. But I think, you know how before you were saying that it was such a different experience from your first time, where you just had to get a, what's it called, a lumpectomy? Just removing the lump. Like, there's no option there. You just get the cancer out. Everything else is intact. Of course, that's the right decision. There's really no room for people to make assumptions about why you're doing things. But when you get into that second stage, where now you have choices that you have to make.
Yes.
This is where I feel like the general population makes the assumption mistake, where we assume that it should be this decision because this, and we've never really had to think through that process. Whereas someone like you, who's gone through it, you understand in so much more depth the implications of your decisions. And I think we covered enough today where we can kind of see a little bit of that process. Like, it's not just about the looks. It's not just about the, it can be about the looks. It can be about a woman's quote unquote general appeal. It can be about health. It can be about just the feeling of having dead objects on your chest, which is something I never had to consider or never even thought about. There's so much, right? And we just barely touched the surface.
Yeah.
So I guess my last question then is, there's going to be people, because there will always be men, fortunately or unfortunately, that are going to say dumb things. And whether they mean it or not, whether it's out of jest or joking or they're serious, I feel like the biggest problem is that they are not educated on these things. Is there a way for people like me, I'll just put myself out there, to learn about these things in a way that's not offensive to other people, but really help me to empathize, understand a little bit better, other than just talking to somebody like you?
Ooh. Well, okay. So I've had people come to me and say to me, you know, I'm about to visit my friend. She's just been diagnosed with breast cancer. Do you have any advice for me? So certain types of jokes that some people find extremely funny, other people find quite offensive. So you would ask them, what kind of support do you want from me? Do you want me to distract you? Or do you want to just talk about it? Or, you know, you want to ask them, because I have met people, like I said before, that they'll give you a play-by-play of everything that they're doing on social media. And then there are others that haven't even told their own kids, for example, and they walk among you. You'll be staring them straight in the face, not knowing that they're in the middle of a cancer diagnosis. So that can happen as well. I also think that the greatest gift that you can give someone who is going through a diagnosis like this is to support whatever decision they make. I have noticed that cancer, and, you know, at least in my case, breast cancer can be a little bit of a political topic because there are people who, for example, there are women, for example, that hate their breast implants, make them so sick, and now they got it out. And then for every other woman that's getting breast implants, they're like on this mission to like say, no, don't do breast implants. And, you know, I've also had a lot of moments where I made certain decisions about my treatment plan. And I've had some people say, oh, you shouldn't do that, and da da da. But yo, man, you're not a doctor.
True.
you actually are not any position to give me medical advice. And I think this is where a lot of people sort of fall, because you will suddenly just say, oh, is that the right thing to do? And should you do that? And I don't agree, you shouldn't do that. And like they say all these crazy things, or give me medical advice on this supplement that's on the market or that supplement doctors, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of find that I am dealing with enough of my own fear, and I don't need to deal with your fear. Best thing to simply say is, I'm sorry that you're going through that, and how can I support you? You know, what kind of support would you like? Do you want me to make jokes and make you forget it? Or do you want to just cry? Or do you want, you know, some sympathy? You just ask them what they want, because everyone deals with it quite differently.
Perfect.
Yeah.
It's the whole theme of the show, right? Don't speak so much, just listen. And as we listen, we'll figure out what the best way to interact and support is. I think, wow, that was almost like I scripted that for you, but I didn't. Thank you, Mina. That was perfect. For everyone else, or for everyone that's listening, I trust that you learned something, at least one thing. I know I learned a lot. But if you want to learn more, if you want to follow Mina on her cancer ass-kicking journey, I would like you to be connected with her, because obviously she is an open book. She does it partly for herself, probably, but also for the benefit of the people that are following along. You'll be able to learn things about how to deal with cancer. You'll learn about how to support those around you who might be going through the struggle. So Mina, where is a great place for people to find you if they want to connect with you?
So the best place to connect with me would be on my Instagram. You can come find me at Fit Girl Rich Girl.
Oh yeah. Fit Girl, yeah. Rich Girl. So Instagram is generally the best place?
Yes.
Okay. Well, there you go, guys. Fit Girl, Rich Girl. But before we wrap it up with Mina, we hesitate to make the whole interview about just one aspect, because as you know, people are complicated creatures, and Mina is as complicated as the rest of us. So we do want to ask you, what's just one interesting, weird, crazy thing about you that the public wouldn't know?
Ooh, so I'm one of those people. It's really horrible. You know how to say jack of all trades, master of none? Mm-hmm. I'm probably a jack of all trades.
Okay.
So I have a bachelor's degree in music education.
Music education, you said?
Yes. I have a bachelor's degree in music education. So I'm a classically trained musician. And then it took me 7 years after graduating to realize I don't want a career in music. So that's when I got into personal training, because I kind of thought to myself, well, what the hell am I going to do with my life now? Well, I kind of like working out. And so I kind of fell into that. And then about 7 years ago, I thought, oh, I should look into an additional stream of income and, and make money. And like, man, my money's in the pits right now. I need help with my money. And so I kind of fell into financial services. So I just sort of bumble along life and fall into things that end up turning into awesome, awesome opportunities. So I'm drifting in the wind.
I feel at some point you're going to fall into writing a book or some kind of speaking or something. I have a feeling.
You never know. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And if you don't, I'm going to bug you about it to make sure you actually end up doing
it.
So
that's like a plan.
All right, Mina, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate all your insight into who you are and the journey you have gone through. Man, it was so valuable. Thank you so much for being with us. For everyone else, until next time.